Soldiers and sailors may travel on their stomachs, but their machinery travels on oil. The Defense Department is among the nation's biggest fuel users. For both cost and strategic reasons, it would like to lessen its dependence on fuels derived from crude oil. The Navy is embarking on a program to go green on how it powers ships, airplanes, and ground vehicles. Joining us to talk about this program is the Navy's Deputy Assistant Secretary for Energy, Tom Hicks. Mr. Hicks, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Amy. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
And tell us about the idea behind the concept of out-greening the Taliban and our enemies in general.
Well, I think you're referring to maybe a piece that Tom Friedman wrote, but that which was great. Our focus really is on really enhancing energy security, energy independence, and really enhancing our warfighting capabilities. And doing that for us is really focusing in on things such as alternative fuels for our fleet, looking at becoming more efficient in the way we use energy, and bringing in efficient renewable technologies into the theaters to take out every barrel of oil that we can out of those theaters.
Now, some of the costs associated with getting fuel to vehicles in Afghanistan, for example, is the transportation of the fuel and the safety that that requires. So if you were to change what is in the tanks that are being delivered, would that really cut your cost that much if you still have to deliver it through these battle zones using these contractors and that whole chain of events?
Well, we think we can get the fuels ultimately to be competitive with what we're paying currently for petroleum. And more to the point, though, for us, it's about energy security and energy independence. It's about having more homegrown sources of fuel where we can use those and deploy those wherever we can throughout the fleet. And by doing that, again, we can enhance our security position, enhance our independence, and not be tied to purchasing oil from countries and locations that aren't as friendly to the United States as we would hope.
Now, airplanes, jet planes, and ships have already been proven that they can run at least partially on these alternative types of fuels. Is that settled science at this point, and now it's just an issue of supply, or do we have to do more discovery in making sure that vehicles can operate long-term on these fuels?
Well, we're certainly doing more research and development, but through 2012, we will have, by the end of 2012, we will have tested and certified all of our surface vessels and all of our aircraft on a 50-50 blend of biofuels, and in the case of aircraft, jet fuel, and in the case of our surface ships, marine diesel. So it'll be a 50-50 blend on all of that, and that'll be done through 2012. And in 2012, we're going to sail what we call the Great Green Fleet in the local operations. And so this will be a demonstration that we can have an entire carrier strike group using alternative fuels. So 50-50 blends in the surface ships, 50-50 blends in the aircraft. And then in 2016, it is our intention to deploy that carrier strike group again. And so we're building up and working with industry to see how we can, you know, A, make sure that the costs and the price points are right, doing the testing and certification on the fuels itself to make sure it meets our very high specifications, and then to make sure that the supplies are going to be there in the quantities that we're going to need.
We're talking with Tom Hicks. He's the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Energy. And you touched on it. I wanted to expand on it, if I could, a little bit. The cost. Is this going to be expensive, one of those deals where it's a big outlay of money at first and then the ROI later?
Well, as it is right now, it's very much in the research and development phase, and we're going through that right now. And so we're not purchasing these fuels in any operational quantities, and as such, you know, there the costs are higher than we like. But what we've been doing is working with industry, and we're getting very good indications that this is going to be competitive with petroleum in the timelines that we need. And so by 2020, for example, part of the Secretary's goals is that by 2020, half of our energy will come from alternative sources. And so by that timeline and based on our working with industry, we feel that the fuels will be competitively priced with petroleum at that point, and we'll be able to use those as drop-in replacements into our ships, into our aircraft.
And so how does that help the military strategically in the long run?
I think strategically, again, it's really about having more secure sources of fuel, more independent, and really enhances our warfighting capability. By in the case of Ford operating bases, You know, there was a study done in 2009 that looked at 2007 data that for one in every 24 fuel convoys, we had a casualty or somebody was killed or wounded in the theater. And so this is a individual soldier or Marine that could be otherwise used to fight the fight, otherwise used to engage with the local population. And so it's our view, if we can take out those barrels of oil from the theater by being more efficient, that it will enhance our combat capabilities.
I understand that the research and development is underway and that this is definitely a work in progress in the very early stages. But what we've been talking about mostly is alternative fuels. Is this going to change the product itself that the fuels go into, the vehicles themselves, in the long run? I'm playing long ball here, way
right
down the road?
No, actually, what we're doing and what's critical to this is that the fuels that we have, the blends that we're looking at, have to be drop-in replacements. We cannot look at making modifications to engines or aircraft or surface vessels in any way. It's really got to be drop-in replacements, so when the fuel's available, when it's at the right price point, we can put those into our tanks. And likewise, if they're not available, we can use petroleum as we have been. So the answer is, we can't really absorb any kind of changes to, kind of the infrastructure, if you will, of the fleet.
And down the line, as you use greater quantities in the years out, what do you envision as the source of those fuels? Do you expect a commercial supply base to develop that can make algae and cooking oil and all that kind of stuff into fuels, or would you do this within the military itself?
Yeah, we really see this coming up from the commercial marketplace, and it's going to be a range of feedstocks. You mentioned algae. Certainly, there's other crops such as camelina that can be used in rotation and don't compete for food, and a range of other ones. Dextrosa is another one that's often cited. From our perspective, we're interested in all those fuels. They have the right characteristics in terms of their life cycle greenhouse gas emissions profiles that are equal to or better than what they're replacing, in this case petroleum. So they have very good attributes. They can be done in without competing for food, which is another important attribute that we're looking for. And we're convinced that the commercial marketplace, based on our discussions with them, based on our discussions with the talking to the venture capital community, that there's going to be a lot of investment in this area. And we're convinced that our goals by 2020, that we'll be able to meet those. Where half of the fleet will be powered by alternative energy.
Would you consider making my new snowblower part of the alternative fuel test program for the winter?
I think we could talk about that. I'm not sure we're going to be able to take that one on, but we can talk about that one.